Welcome to The Forum on 90.5 WCBE. The Forum is the Columbus Metropolitan Club's weekly program that cultivates the conversations that drive Columbus forward. Every Wednesday, The Forum brings together visionary leaders to examine issues that matter. We'd love to have you join us. Tickets and information about upcoming forums are available at columbusmetroclub.org. Queer joy, the act of celebrating identity, love, and community, is powerful and political. In the face of anti-LGBTQ+ rhetoric and legislation, queer joy has become both a lifeline and a form of resistance. Our panelists this week explore what queer joy is and what it means to Central Ohio's LGBTQ+ community. This week, CMC welcomes Dr. Melanie Korn, president of the Columbus College of Art and Design, Karen Hewitt, founder and principal consultant with K. Hewitt Consulting and the Culture of You, and Dr. Karen Williams, founder and CEO of the International Institute of Humor and Healing Arts. Our host is Ron Murray, CEO of Peace of Mind Incorporated and Community Engagement Liaison with Stonewall Columbus. Let's join this week's Columbus Metropolitan Club Forum, Joy is Resistance, Queer Power in an Unequal World.
Thank you. You're supposed to clap until I get up here. That's what they told me. I can still keep clapping. Thank you. Well, they asked me back, so this is what they're going to get. They're glutton for punishment. Good afternoon. Thank you for having me back again. So we're here to talk about queer joy. And so we're going to spend some time talking about that and what it looks like, who has access to it, who has the privilege of it, who has the control of it. So we're going to get right into it. She's already introduced us, our panelists. So the first question is, when was the first time you remember joy? We're going to get real deep into it first. When was the first time you remember joy? Tell me your deepest, darkest secrets.
I remember joy as freedom, always. Hanging out with my brothers. I'm the oldest of seven. There are two brothers under me. And they had to do my bidding, and that made me joyful. And so we were climbing trees, and I'm up in the tree, and my mother says, girls don't climb trees. And I'm up in the tree wondering how I'm gonna get down. So that was the first time that my joy was interrupted by, to this day, I ask my mother, she's still alive, what was your modus operandi? What was that about? Why did you even say that? And it was fear-based, you know. Everything around girls, most of us had to experience our joy being quashed because we were free and yet not, because mostly because of people's fear around what might happen to us. So as a result, I don't remember how I got down from the tree.
I had a very similar experience. I grew up in right near a development that was happening, a suburban development. And so when I was little, we would go run in the fields and play, and we would, you know, climb into the foundations of all these houses that were being built. And it was amazing. And it was great. A lot of freedom, you know, being in the late 70s, early 80s. And I remember very specifically this one time that I was running around outside, you know, no shoes on, no shirt on. I was probably about five. And some neighbor lady, you know, stopped me and chastised me for not having a shirt on. You know, you can't run around like that. You're growing up. And I just remember, again, you know, the pure joy of childhood freedom, again, being interrupted by, you know, gendered expectations for little girls. And it was a bummer.
I'll jump on that bandwagon. You know, I think it's interesting how you're just in joy. It's a birthright. You know, you're in joy until you're reminded that there are people that don't want you to be in that joy. And then it's a little concerning probably. But my first memory where I had to grapple with that, we used to go every year. I'll say the first thing. We used to go every year. We had a timeshare in St. Pete, Florida. And so we would go to, you know, Disney and stuff. So there's like a lot of awe there. Like I was enamored with everything there and a little in love with Mickey Mouse. However, when I grew up and was playing sports, that was where I was in the church. And so I would play outside. I'd be the only girl playing with them outside. And The guy I was dating at the time said, you know, you're the only girl out there. And it was a thing. And we kind of broke up after that. And then I went on to play in college basketball. And he came and saw me play at Miami of Oxford, Ohio. And he was just like, you're like the best person on the court. And I was like, I know. So, you know, I had joy just playing sports and just being a rowdy, athletic person. And then it was like, it mattered that I was a girl doing that with a bunch of guys. And I didn't see anything wrong with that or any issues with that. And I was really happy because my team always won. So, you know, that was one of those things where it was like, all right. And then it was like, we're not in a relationship anymore. So, I mean, it has some consequences, I think, at times.
Thank you. From hearing the stories, it almost sounds like Newton's law of motion. An object will stay in motion until an outside force acts upon it. It sounds like we're all in our joy until someone tells us we're doing something, until someone tells us it's wrong. And we talked about that in preparing for this panel. So next question I'm going to ask you is, how does race, class, gender, or ability to shape access to joy in an unequal system affects joy? See, we're going real deep.
Yeah, so that's a lot of stuff, yeah? And the reality is, you know, if you look up the difference between joy and happiness, it's really important to know the difference. Happiness is dependent on circumstances. You're happy when you get a new car, a new lover, a new job, you know, and then you're unhappy when the lover leaves, the car gets smashed, and, you know, and you don't have the job anymore. So there's that thing of relative happiness and absolute happiness, right? Joy is really self-directed. You can bring out joy in really awful circumstances. It's not dependent on an external situation. So the thing that people need to realize is that people experience joy under very impossible kinds of situations. We need to think of like a Nelson Mandela, right? Imprisoned wrongfully, right? And still able to access joy. Enslaved peoples. I mean, just all the whole issue now is we get so far away from our peoplehood, our personhood, our humanity, our own selves, that we externalize conditions of life that are accessible to us no matter what's going on out there. And so, yes, rights can be taken away. And yes, people are suffering and all of that. And yet, you can still access joy.
That is just a hand clap. Yeah.
I would just add to that and say that it goes even beyond, I think, being able to access joy, but really the necessity and the political power of accessing that joy. It's no secret that we have a lot of folks in this country right now who are trying to, regulate who we are as queer people, particularly, you know, trans folks. And I think about some of those laws and what their purported purpose is, right? The idea that we are trying to keep other people safe, trying to create equality. And I think about that. You know, I think about, a bathroom bill that says that my, partner who's a trans man who's bald and bearded should be in the women's room because that's going to make everyone safer. And I think about the absurdity of that. And I recognize that that's not actually what they're trying to do. That's not what that's a false pretense, right? And that instead they're trying to diminish the possibility for queerness, for trans identities. And so, you know, the natural response to that, I think, is anger and outrage and protest. And that's 100%, a right thing, I think, to do. But I would argue that I think at times we often say that in those conditions, we can't have joy because we have to be angry. We have to be fighting. And I would say that joy, queer joy, is just as radical of a response to oppression, and that's something that we need to maybe try even harder for ourselves and our community to make space for.
I would just say joy is a casualty of unchecked and abused power, because joy in and of itself, I think, is available to us all. I believe it's a birthright. But folks who are in power and wielding control and that tight grip, and it is fear-based, right? Like, there's a lot of healing that hasn't occurred, that I don't need to control anyone because I'm good with me, right? Like, and so whenever anybody is like in need of controlling a population, a demographic, or saying that someone doesn't exist, to me, that also shows a lack of joy there, right? Like, if I have joy, then I'm not worried about how anybody else expresses their joy. It probably has nothing to do with me. And so in that sense, I think, you know, to the point that racism and sexism and homophobia and all of that is a symptom, a byproduct of a fear and not wanting to claim it and not going with the crowd and not being with the socialized thing. And so that's why it's a little radical to me to first of all be like proud and out. And then also, like, I'm gonna crack a joke. Like, I'm gonna crack a joke at some point and sometime. If anybody's ever sat with me in this room, y'all know it's like, it's a problem. But like, I, you know, and I think that, that has a lot to do with the work that I do personally, like on my own self. And I think there's a lack of that gestures at, you know, world administration, et cetera. But I think that's a challenge.
Thank you. I think we also have to be people who are grateful and pay homage to, in particular, the civil rights movement, which is really the blueprint for all the other movements that exist today. You're talking, I'm thinking of Fannie Lou Hamer, right? Someone sat next to Fannie Lou Hamer and said to her, I'm gonna beat you to within an inch of your life, and did it, okay? Now, that's who I keep in my spirit. And so attributes like resilience and perseverance and kindness and really taking away this imagery around privilege, because I'm going to tell you, academics and scholars came up with white privilege because it was supremacy and domination. But if you say privilege, it sounds like something I might want or a gift, okay? And it soft soaps it. But it's not a privilege to keep people under your thumb. It's not a privilege to create institutions that bind people to false realities. It's not a privilege to have constructed a metal faceplate for an enslaved woman who talked too much so that all she could do was drool out of the side of her mouth. That's not a privilege. We need to really hold ourselves accountable around the language that we use also, so that we don't just feel like we're in these individual silos of oppression. I'm not gonna out-oppress you, okay? I'm just not gonna do it, you know? We have to really understand the power dynamic that's out there to oppress us all because we're different. And again, it's fear-based. I will not live in fear. As Karen says, joy is a right. It's a birthright.
So what I heard was that joy was intrinsic. Happiness was based on things. Joy is a form of protest, and joy is a birthright. Did I sum that up for you? So the next question I have for you is, who was most often left out of the conversation of queer joy, and how do we center around them? Trans people?
Trans people. That's like, as everything has gone, I think that a lot of times, in my experience at least, identifying with trans, being trans, it's one of those things where I'm having those experiences and curating and creating those experiences, but people aren't gonna come out to stuff if they're not safe. So I think that's something to consider. And we see for a fact how they've tried to separate trans from the LGBT, right? Like, they've tried to take that T over here and also make some of us be, you know, in line with that. And I think that's the line. We don't let that happen. We continue to bring up queer folks and trans folks that we know. We continue to bring up opportunities for us to be in safe spaces with each other. We continue to uplift and amplify and support them with mutual aid and care. Knowing that I'm privileged in that space also, who can I bring into it? Who can I pay? Like, I have a business. Who can I pay to be doing great, great work? Because it's very innovative and creative work, because they've had to do everything that they've had to come against everything to be great at all. And so there's so much resilience there. And so I would just say trans folks around that.
I'm going to speak up for the L just because I gotta. I'm a comic, for those of you that don't know. I'm the first out black lesbian comic in the United States. And my tours were canceled in 2020. In 2019, I had applied to Miami University in Oxford. And I got my acceptance letter. I went down there, and I just got my PhD in social gerontology in May. I was just sharing with a couple of the lesbians. First of all, my work is called Laughing Out Loud, Narratives of the Contribution of Humor to the Health and Well-Being of Older Black Lesbians. I had to have three different committees. The first one didn't think I should talk about humor, it's too amorphous. The second one was so homophobic, lesbophobic, it was ridiculous. I can't support your work, I don't believe in your work. But then when I got to work, there is so little on lesbians, black lesbians, and older black lesbians that I was practically drawing from everybody to create this dissertation. We are invisible, and I am fighting that invisibility.
I'll just add to that to say, I think, you know, the thread that I'm sort of hearing between both of these responses to the question is really about access to community. I agree that I think joy is intrinsic, but I also feel like it is at times much easier to access that joy when you, you know, can be in community with others, when you can, you know, again, go to exciting, wonderful queer spaces and see joyful things, when you see that joy modeled for you, maybe in others, that, you know, if you're having trouble accessing it yourself. And I think that, you know, I would answer that question to say, whoever is least able to access community at any given time is probably those who are, you know, most left out of this conversation around joy, whether it's trans folks because they fear, you know, being out in space, whether it's, you know, older black lesbians because they don't have a community in that same way that they have access to. I think all of those, it comes down to that sort of sense of community.
I really agree with you. We have the community. It's just, again, it's almost like black people that constantly use white people as the standard, negotiable. Anyway, straight people, you know, when we're always trying to appeal to straight people, like recognize us, see us, acknowledge us. It's unrealistic. Some people are here because I went to, you know who Chris Williamson is? Like the grandmother of women's music. She had a concert here last Saturday in Columbus. And I went there. There were 300 white women and 2 black women. You would think then that there are no black lesbians. That's just not the truth. Racism is just so part of the fabric of this American life that to create a really, truly diverse community, we're going to spend our lives doing that. And it's a joy to have that struggle, because part of joy is also rooted in purpose and meaning. That's why it's different from happiness. You can get happy just hanging out with your pal and eating ice cream. But joy also has as a value knowing your purpose and ascribing meaning to it.
So I wouldn't be who I was as a moderator if I didn't put my own piece on this conversation question. I'm gonna speak to my brothers of black gay men. Oftentimes in these settings, in these meetings, we are becoming scarce at these tables. Even though we're in these spaces when we're talking about HIV, when we're talking about other negative things, but oftentimes you don't see our faces there. We're being eliminated in these conversations. So I would say black gay men are not in these conversations because we're not allowed to express ourselves in our true spaces, our authentic selves. So when we show up who we really are, unless we're giggling and smiling with our white counterparts, we're acceptable. But then our passionate, emotional, expressive selves, then we become violent, we become assertive, we become, threatening, and then we're isolated out of the conversations. We're at the tables until we show up who we really are and our intelligent, our beautiful, our huge selves. Then everyone else becomes the victim, and then we don't want them there anymore. So then we become isolated. Oh, we don't want that one at the table, and then we start being isolated because our voice is no longer relevant. But then when our voices become less relevant, then you don't have us at the table, and these conversations happen without us, and then you start speaking up for us and get the message wrong. Just wanted to throw that in there. I'm going back to being moderator, sorry. Next question. How does art, humor, storytelling sustain queer joy and healing? How does art, humor, storytelling sustain queer joy and healing? Do I sound like Alex Trebek?
I have had the luxury of producing some comedy shows really recently. I am not on this level here, but I'm newer to the stand-up space. I've been doing improv since I was 14, but around stand-up, and like I have this curated audience that is so multicultural and intergenerational, and getting people there, and I'm highlighting unapologetically Black, queer artists, comedians. I even have some musicians. This next one I'm doing, shameless plug, November 7th at the Attic, is like all Black women comics. Black women are assigned female at birth, and then it's a musician as well. So we're gonna do some house music locally, and they're all Black women or assigned female at birth, and it's pretty cool. But then the crowd is getting into it, and then there have been people that have thanked me after these shows and said, I never wanna be in front of an audience that isn't like this, that isn't this diverse, that isn't this open and understanding and literate and critical thinking and like all of these things. And like, you have to come with your A game in that sense as an artist. And I think that that push for like what is relevant and what can we talk about and what can we make creatively funny, or what can we have our conversations. I do the podcast and it's like we're crying, we're laughing, and then we're probably hugging or spreading some wisdom, you know. I think having the ability to have all that complexity of emotion and interaction is undeniably incredible, and it will pull people out. It's literally healing, and it will pull people out of dark times.
Such a polite audience. I know. So I'm the president of Columbus College of Art and Design, and we're just downtown, right down Broad Street, and we focus on visual art and visual design programs. We've got, you know, a little under 1,000 students, and close to 60%, 60% of our students identify as part of the LGBTQ community, which is incredible and amazing, and not super uncommon for art and design colleges. But I say that because I think this question is something that I think a lot about on my daily basis, just in my work life. And for me, I think, building off of what Karen was saying, that there is a... you know, there is a way in which creating art, again, gives you an outlet for, of course, your, you know, creative spirit and energy, gives you an opportunity to access joy, but also, you know, just observe, being, you know, viewing, being a, you know, an audience member for the arts, also has, you know, scientific benefits in terms of healing, in terms of just your mental health and wellness, and gives you, again, that opportunity and ability to access joy. And again, you know, just creating those queer spaces. I think, you know, CCAD, I hear so many new students who, you know, they show up, whether it's at a admitted students day visit or when they first get here. And there's such incredible joy that, you know, they talk about, you know, having found their people. And I think that is so amazing. And again, I think it's all tied to the creative community that they're finding, but also maybe queer community that they're finding for the first time for many. And I think, you know, they're wrapped together. I don't have a very clear answer, but they're all just kind of wrapped together. Yeah, it is. It's belonging. It's great.
The healing piece is huge. I think everybody will agree. We've got to heal. We've got to heal from the racism. We've got to heal from the sexism. We've got to heal from this separation. We would, if we were united in even devoting ourselves to healing ourselves, then our families and our communities, you know, it would have such a profound effect. I started my International Institute of Humor and Healing Arts in 1988, living in San Francisco at the height of the AIDS pandemic. And you talk about joy as resistance. A guy would tell me on Tuesday he had AIDS. He was dead on Saturday. It was stark. It was bleak. And those of us who were comics, we'd go to a club.
The club would make $1,500, let's say, on a night. They'd bring in a comic, they'd make $3,000, and they would bring that $3,000 to Michael in the hospital. It was that real. And I learned about activism when those guys in the Castro would have an event and raise $250,000 in a night. Because if you remember around Reagan, he didn't mention HIV AIDS for 8 years he was in office, okay? So we had to take it in our own hands to be able to be activists, to do our own healing, to fight the trauma at that time. If you remember, people were going in to see people with AIDS in hazmat outfits. It was bleak. It was horrifying. And yet, I'll never forget my friend telling me that he had AIDS. And we cried and then we laughed and rolled around on the floor, okay? Because the body itself can only take so much grief. And then something else kicks in. That humor and healing piece is so relatable. It's so relevant that we cannot lose our sense of humor in this horrible time we're in, and we must focus on healing.
I do want to add to that with just the thought of, I have some different personas, I guess, in public life and professional life. And for a while, I was like, I don't want to. Like, I don't want to produce this. I don't want to have to be the producer. I don't want to have to be the talent. I don't want to have to do the marketing. I don't want to have to do all of this. And what I realized is as I was invited and being artists in other spaces, there was nothing as comprehensive as I could create with my friends and with all of my intersections and identities. And so I think one thing to note for you all, if it's a call to action, if you're like, I don't know that space, or I want it, or you go to something and you're like, there's still something missing, then my encouragement for you is to either find people that can do it with you, because I have an amazing team, but like, do it yourself. Like, create the space yourself. And that's not to say it in like a do-it-yourself way, like, you go do it, but there's only you that can do it with your intersections and create belonging for people in your tribe. And I mean, if you find another tribe in some events or things that you go to, fantastic. Like, great. Keep that belonging. Stay there. Stay locked in. But if you are seeing something and you'd want to create something and you don't have it, and you know what you want and you have a vision for it, get with people and create it. If not, you know, call me. But get with it and create it, right?
Thank you.
You're listening to the Columbus Metropolitan Club's weekly forum on 90.5 WCBE. Queer joy, the act of celebrating identity, love, and community, is powerful and political. In the face of anti-LGBTQ+ rhetoric and legislation, queer joy has become both a lifeline and a form of resistance. Our panelists this week explore what queer joy is and what it means to Central Ohio's LGBTQ+ community. This week's panelists are Dr. Melanie Korn, president of the Columbus College of Art and Design, Karen Hewitt, founder and principal consultant with K. Hewitt Consulting, and Dr. Karen Williams, founder and CEO of the International Institute of Humor and Healing Arts. Our host is Ronald Murray, CEO of Peace of Mind Incorporated and Community Engagement Liaison with Stonewall Columbus. We'll return to this week's CMC Forum, Joy is Resistance, Queer Power in an Unequal World, after a short break.
Do you love amazing stories? I know I do. I'm Michael Kent, and every week on my show, we examine something from history that's so unbelievable it sounds made up, but is 100% verifiably true. It's a podcast called The Internet Says It's True, and there are hundreds of episodes to choose from. For example, did you know the story of how Leonard Nimoy came up with Live Long and Prosper for Star Trek? Or how Colombia is dealing with a hippo problem that goes back directly to Pablo Escobar? Or one of my favorite stories, a man figured out that a nondescript Winnebago being auctioned online was actually an important part of space exploration history. These are all stories from The Internet Says It's True. Listening to a podcast has never been easier. You can listen through any popular podcast app, through the NPR app, or download the fantastic new WCBE app, click the Podcasts tab, and look for The Internet Says It's True with Michael Kent. You'll have so many stories up your sleeve, you'll feel like the smartest person in the room, especially if you're home alone.
Hi, this is Sue Foley, inviting you to listen to Music Journeys. Hear local and national artists share how the love of music began and what inspired their latest project. Mike Foley blends it all together with some music. Now, you can't believe him if he says he's related to me and inherited my musical talent, but you can be sure that other Foley will deliver a worthwhile listening experience too.
I guess I'm all right being that other Foley. Listen to Music Journeys Saturday afternoons at 3:30.
And in the podcast experience at wcbe.org.
Welcome back to the Columbus Metropolitan Club's weekly forum on 90.5 WCBE. Queer joy, the act of celebrating identity, love, and community, is powerful and political. In the face of anti-LGBTQ+ rhetoric and legislation, queer joy has become both a lifeline and a form of resistance. Our panelists this week explore what queer joy is and what it means to Central Ohio's LGBTQ+ community. This week's panelists are Dr. Melanie Korn, president of the Columbus College of Art and Design, Karen Hewitt, founder and principal consultant with K. Hewitt Consulting and the Culture of You, and Dr. Karen Williams, founder and CEO of the International Institute of Humor and Healing Arts. Our host is Ronald Murray, CEO of Peace of Mind Incorporated and Community Engagement Liaison with Stonewall Columbus. Let's get back to this week's CMC Forum, Joy is Resistance, Queer Power in an Unequal World.
So my next question is this. What gives you hope that queer joy can endure and grow in today's climate?
All of the people here.
All the people here
that you came here, that you are seeking to be a part of. You know, when you're speaking, you know, I'm PhD in gerontology. I'm going to be very ageist right now. I've got, what, about maybe 40 years on you, maybe 30. How old are you? 30 years. Excuse me. Those young people. Anyway, what I'm saying is, I love that this, you know, she almost embarrassed me in the advertisement for this event because she kept saying, my Shiro, and this and that and the other. I am. Because you can now say diverse, but those women over there know that when I was entertaining them 30 and 40 years ago, it was just me and a sea of white women. And I used to say to myself, what makes you think that I'm so brave? That I can come places, Chris Williamson, you saw it, 300 white women, it's 2025. There were two black women there, me the MC, and one other person, okay? Why is this still like this? What inner work have I had to do to keep showing up? If I didn't believe in joy as resistance, I would just drop out. Many times I wanted to drop out, but I thought if I drop out, no one else will be there. And then she shows up. No, 30 years later, okay? I'm telling you the truth. But my joy, the inner healing I've done, what I've contributed, you'll all see the documentary in January, what I've contributed is real. And in the meantime, I've done tremendous healing. I've helped heal communities. And our joy is, it's real, it's tangible. And it takes people to be fearless in terms of the pursuit of our humanity, our personhood, our right to be joyful.
What was the question again?
Your Bibles to Matthew, verse 1. No. What gives you hope that queer joy can endure and grow in today's climate?
I'll add to the mush. You know, I mean, to that point, I remember us talking one time and we were trying to get together because I'm like, I think you reached out to me on Facebook. You're like, I think I need to know you. I'm like, oh my God. Please accept my friend request. But as we were trying to connect, it's like, oh, I'm going on this Olivia cruise, or oh, I'm going, like, you know what I mean? It's like, oh, no big deal. But I think representation is always important when you can see somebody doing things and you can follow in a footstep and know that it's possible for you. But what continues to have me hopeful is the legacy the legacy of pioneering, the legacy of doing it alone, the legacy of doing it scared, the legacy of doing it without knowing where your next resources were gonna come from for said project. Whatever that was, all the sacrifices, everything comes with a cost. So whatever they had to sacrifice, just knowing that that was, like, the civil rights movement happened. Like, they're walking back things from the civil rights movement. It's been done before with way less technology and with way less ability to connect across, you know, regions and states and even countries. But I think that it's possible because we've seen it literally happen before. The people in the civil rights movement didn't have that. You know what I mean? So if you're thinking about that and all the revolt, you can go all the way back to enslavement. You know, like, there were revolts and there were, you know, you have Black Wall Street, you know, you had Tulsa, like, you have all of these places you have that have been, you know, tried to deflate it. They tried to deflate those folks. And we continue to, and Black people do it real well. I don't know if y'all have ever been to a cookout. I don't know if they're giving out those invitations right now. It might be a few years on that, but nevertheless, if you've ever been to a cookout, we gonna clown each other. And that's, like, the way I show you love. If somebody's not joking with me, or if I'm not joking with somebody, I don't fool with you. You know what I'm saying? And so, like, that ability to laugh at yourself, that ability to laugh at each other, we need that walking into what we're walking into or continuing to walk into right now. And so just being able to see that movement has occurred and that they're actually walking it back, that, to me, the fact that they're walking it back shows me how much joy and how much resilience was required to get to that place in the first place. So the fact that they're trying to squander it always lets me know where exactly what path I'm on. Like, oh, I'm doing it right. I'm doing it right if they're coming after it because they don't have it.
Yeah. I'll just add quickly to that, and I think one of the other things that gives me hope right now, I think, is, you know, again, sort of thinking generationally. Again, I wouldn't be a college president if I didn't say, you know, our students, right, our younger folks, who are fierce in their willingness to, you know, find, again, opportunities for expression and joy. And the other piece of that, I think, is technology. I think, you know, as horrible in many ways as it can be for democracy and other things that we care about, it also can be an opportunity. And I think when it comes to, you know, queer joy, joy as resistance, you know, I think the tools that we have now that we didn't necessarily have, you know, even 10 years ago, much less 20, 30, 40 years ago, give us new opportunities and platforms to find community, to reach across, you know, time and space in ways that I think create opportunities, again, for art, for resistance, for culture, for joy in new and expansive ways.
Thank you so much, everyone. Thank you. It is CMC's long tradition to take audience questions and those on a live stream as well. So we'll move to the questions from a live stream and in-person audience in just a few minutes. So I'm gonna ask one last question. If you have any questions, please make your way over to the microphone now. And if you're joining us on YouTube, please type your questions into the chat. Before we take audience questions, panelists, I have one more question for you. What's one practice you recommend for individuals or organizations to center joy in daily life or programming? What's one practice you recommend for individuals or organizations to center joy in their daily life or programming? Or legislation? Or city ordinance? Or rules? Or bills? Or funding?
I'll start with just a simple, you know, personal one. I think, you know, first of all, stop the guilt, right? You know, the guilt about, you know, taking time for joy when you should be, you know, fighting hard. Taking time to do nothing and zoning out in whatever that looks like to you, you know, whether that's going down rabbit holes or scrolling. I think, you know, that time of just restoration is important to be able to access joy. And I will also say that I think, you know, laughing every day is important because it takes that muscle memory. And I know not all joy is laughing. I think, again, as opposed to happiness, it can be a much deeper, quiet feeling. But I do think just literal laughing out loud expression just, like, physically reminds your body that that is something that is important and actually physically changes your body with, you know, endorphins and you know, serotonin and all that good stuff.
Drugs.
Yeah. Natural drugs.
No, the natural. I'll say natural drugs. Excuse me. I had a flashback.
Intrinsic drugs like
joy. I'm sorry. I had a flashback.
Yeah. The drugs that come naturally inside of you.
Absolutely. The natural ones are best. So,
the views of the reflect the CMC.
But I am a woman of a certain age. I can't lie. I did inhale. Anyway. Bouncing off what you're saying. Self-care. It's a term now that almost feels a little bit overused, and we don't really know what that means. Like, we think bubble bath or something like that. No, self-care is if that toxic person is coming over to talk to you one more time, you don't have to talk to them. Okay? You really don't have to talk to them. If there's negativity all around you, people who just complain, chronic complainers, get to stepping. I don't have time for that. Okay? I mean, and it really takes a lot to really put yourself first. And I don't mean in that classic way we're hearing now, narcissism. I'm talking about a way that keeps you, I meditate twice a day, every day. I've been a Buddhist for 53 years. I mean, you know, sorry, brother, but it's okay. No, really, seriously, you must find something that gives you that inner peace and that stamina that says, I am able to stand on my own no matter what's going on, who's coming at me, what's happening out there. I am safe. I am at peace. I am in joy. And I am enjoying this gift called life. We've got to be grateful for the very gift of life itself, because there are people, and especially to safeguard our health, we must safeguard our health. So that self-care piece is very, very important. And I really hope that, because I'm just getting there. You know, a lot of us are care. How many of you are caregivers? Oh, it's exhausting. Exhausting. And then you do feel guilty when you step away and you take time for yourself. But if you tell yourself that without taking care of myself, I don't have anything to give, then it makes sense that you do put yourself first.
I really love what both of you have said. So to me, in my head, I'm a math major, I'm starting to put equations. So I'm like, oh, peace plus restoration are the conditions that are necessary for joy. And so I say I write to heal, I create to heal, and I share to be in community. And so for me, I don't know how many of you are familiar with the Artist Way. Yeah, we got some hands. And for those of you that aren't, I think it's around 7, I have to remember that workshop we did at the Museum of Art, but like around 7, you know, we start getting that socialization about our creativity, and we're told not to, you know, embrace it, and we're told to get serious, you know, and then we start to, and that veil thins up a little bit. And I would just say, you know, try to go back to childlike wonder as much as possible and write it. It doesn't have to be good to anybody else. It's for you. And then if you're sharing, you know, share where it feels safe. It's vulnerable because it's like you're just completely exposed out there as an artist. But I think, you know, Nina Simone said that, you know, it's an artist's duty to represent the times. And I think if I'm not doing that, then what am I doing? And so to the practices and self-care, I have like a scroll of like practices because I need a lot to regulate. But I think to that, do the art, post it, to say it. You're going to find somebody that connects with it. And if you get one person that connects with it, I think we've done our job to let people know that they're not alone.
Dance is the only exercise that affects dementia. The only one. Dance. Don't worry about how you look. Don't, you know, white people, I know you do 1 in 3, but dance anyway, okay? It's fine. We won't laugh, you know? Just dance.
We'll put our hands up with you, really. Like, we, you know, we'll do it. We'll do the things. Dance.
Thank you so much. Now, Doug Buchanan with CMC is curating questions from our live stream audience. For those of you who are here with us, please join Doug over at the microphone. Doug, what is our first question?
Ron, thank you very much, and thank you so much to today's panelists for a great conversation. As Ron said, if you have a question for today's panelists, please do join me here at the microphone. If you're watching online, type your question into the chat. We'll try to get to as many of those as possible. Great questions at CMC always have two things in common for our regulars. They take just a few seconds to ask, and what punctuation mark does a question end with? They end with a question mark. Yes, thank you very much to our regulars. I'm going to launch us off with this question from the live stream audience. Tommy Young says he is an out and proud gay man. How do we bring our own community together to join forces with other communities to stand together? And Karen, I think this builds on some of your comments already.
What was the question again, please? I was turning the page. My ADHD kicked in. I'm sorry.
Tommy Young wants to know, how do we bring our own community together to join forces with other communities to stand together?
Oh, he's an out gay man. So you want to ask the gay man on the stage?
Yes, that
okay. I don't feel marginalized at all. Okay. Tommy. Well, Tommy, thank you for your question. Well, Tommy, I think you find it, I think we talked about it here, find community and belonging. I think that there are spaces that we come together oftentimes, but we first, I'll just speak from my perspective as a gay man. We want to bring ourselves together with other communities, but we don't find ourselves, other communities don't find us inviting, as being very honest and transparent. Oftentimes, we think we are invited, but we're really not. We have to make sure our spaces are open and inviting to make ourselves accommodating to other communities, just as accommodating we want them to be for us. We want them to learn our pronouns, our idiosyncrasies, and how to respect us. We want also to respect their spaces as well. So as much as we want them to learn us and respect us, we have to do the same thing to them when we're in their spaces, and then we can come together. It doesn't take that long. It's not that hard. But also find where those intersections meet at. Karen spoke about intersections earlier. When you're building your own community to find out where your joy is, we can do that together with one another. We're not that different. And so finding out where we meet at, sometimes our enemy is our friend. Figuring out that we're better together, we have more in common together to figuring out how do we beat these strongholds that are against us. Thank you, Tommy.
Well, thank you all. My name is Shannon Hart, and I have the honor of serving as City Council President here in Columbus, also a person of intersections of being out, gay and black male leading our community. My question is, because the conversation was so rich and brilliant in helping us navigate this moment, what role does compartmentalization play in joy? Is compartmentalization a good thing? Is it a bad thing? You know, we try to save space for our families and our loved ones, but we have so much stuff coming in. What is our thought on the idea of compartmentalizing to find joy or just even to survive?
That's a very deep question. You know, we all do a little bit of in-grouping. And sometimes that's where that safety comes from. When we talk about safety, we're saying that I'm part of an in-group and I can look outside and sometimes even make fun of that other group. But again, that's that circumstantial happiness. The reality is that to compartmentalize doesn't really help. It just doesn't. It adds to the division that's already being accented in this culture. And I don't find it to be that useful. When we're talking about resilience, the reason that resilience has meaning is because it assumes that there was some pushback. People grow through challenge. You know, some of what's happening now, why these white men are so angry, because they've lived in this privilege where they expect certain things. And they're mad because the trans people, the black people, the gay people, we've had to do so much pushback that now we're hardy. We're resilient, we're well-trained, very educated, getting some of the money, and they're pissed off because they don't have those traits, many of them. Because that illusion of privilege, right, meant that they did not have to work as hard or challenge as many barriers. And so what that leads to is anger. You know, how many of you have children, right? When you don't give your child what they want, when they want it, in the way that they want it, what do? They have tantrums, right? And then you have to explain to them or, you know, meet some harsh punishment to which they then grow. Hopefully, it's not too harsh. But it's that constant kind of push and pull that actually brings out the best in people.
It's when we're all together that we really grow. We don't grow in our own separate silos. We grow when the population is diverse. Any of you architects in here? You know the best housing is mixed housing. Yeah, we need to have diversity for our own survival and to maintain the hope and resilience that we want to see.
Just really quickly, just to add, you know, it's when you were asking that question, Shannon, I was thinking about it in terms of sort of emotional, you know, compartmentalization. And I feel like I don't even know if that's a real thing, right? Like, kind of, you know, kind of like we all talked about how we all, everyone multitasks, and then someone was finally like, there's no such thing as multitasking. It's just, you know, fast switching between focuses, right? I kind of feel the same is true of this notion of compartmentalization. Like, can you really take your rage and anger and stick it in a box? You know, I don't know that you can. And so I feel like we have to figure out how to have joy in the same space as rage, not like in a different space. And I don't know exactly what that looks like, but I think it's about taking that fire of rage and letting that fire feed the joy as well.
I love that. And what I'll say to that is I have a tendency to be able to compartmentalize. And what I think I realized after some years of therapy for me is that intrinsically, like, I get to show up fully. And I think that there are times when I can express fully and there are times when I can't express fully. And I know those places, and I don't have too much on my calendar where I'm not allowed to show up fully. And I mean, I've worked really hard to get there. But I think with everything going on and the onslaught of information, propaganda, et cetera, I think it's really challenging to in the moment always process, right? But if you have a practice for processing, if like I write in the morning and I do brain dumps at night on a voice memo, right? Like, so just to clear my brain out so I can just sleep. Because I have that hypercognitive type of neurodivergence. And so I think, you know, it doesn't serve me. And I have this whole thing about like point of loss and like what has to happen for you to get to the point where you're like, no more. But I don't know if it's being over 40 or what. I'm just like, I don't want to be in any space where I can't show up fully. Even if you know that about me and I'm not like expressing gaily or whatever, you know, like, I mean, if I'm not expressing in that way, that you still know that about me. Like, I'm pretty vulnerable and transparent about that kind of stuff, my identities. But I think making sure that you're in spaces where you're celebrated and centered. And there's a difference between being centered and being tolerated, as Ron was talking about. I think you know when you're centered and you know when you're fully accepted, like all of you. And so trying to lean into those spaces more. And I know that's not always possible, especially in the work that you do. But what I would say is to, you know, have your confidants and have your circle where you can have your first reaction, where you can move through that emotion and release that energy and maybe dance a little bit too afterwards, you know what I'm saying? But like, you need to have like an emergency grounding plan. I think at this point in America, in this time, you need to have an emergency grounding plan. Like, I need 15 minutes to regulate my nervous system again. I got to come down from what I just saw, what I just read, what I just had a conversation about. So it really, really matters to make sure you have those people around you that you can say whatever you have to say. And then they're going to be like, okay, now what are we going to do?
Hello, I'll be quick. Thank you. I'm Joseph Souza. I just want to ask about grief, actually, really quick. And I'm just going to leave it an open-ended question. Anything you have to say about the relationship and or maybe tension between grief and joy?
I do a lot of grief work. And I wouldn't, if you would have told me 10 years ago that my workshops would be around wellness, regulation of nervous systems, grief and loss and change, I would probably be like, nah, I don't want to do that. But like, it's present right now. And so I think the thing about grief is that it really is all that love, all that memory, all that joy that you had with that person, place, or thing, and then, or that moment, right? And then you're trying to process that because it doesn't exist anymore. So you had some belonging there, or you had some love there, and then you're trying to figure out, how does this still exist in me without this person, place, or thing? And so where joy comes into me is to be able to, in those moments of nostalgia, in those moments of memory, to just be able to like howl and cackle and like laugh and remember in joy. Remember in joy, like be with it in joy, be with the grief in joy. And I always say invite the grief. Not always, I've recently started saying invite the grief because I haven't previously. And when you invite the grief, you have to process, you have to deal with those emotions. And on the other side of that is acceptance and possibly joy, right? And hopefully you can find that.
You've been listening to the Columbus Metropolitan Club's weekly forum on 90.5 WCBE. Queer Joy, the act of celebrating identity, love, and community, is powerful and political. In the face of anti-LGBTQ+ rhetoric and legislation, Queer Joy has become both a lifeline and a form of resistance. Our panelists this week explored what Queer Joy is and what it means to Central Ohio's LGBTQ+ community. We're grateful to this week's panelists, Dr. Melanie Korn, president of the Columbus College of Art and Design, Karen Hewitt, founder and principal consultant with K. Hewitt Consulting and the Culture of You, and Dr. Karen Williams, founder and CEO of the International Institute of Humor and Healing Arts. Our host was Ronald Murray, CEO of Peace of Mind Incorporated and Community Engagement Liaison with Stonewall Columbus. This forum was made possible by the Lynn Greer Legacy and Civic Engagement Fund and was sponsored by Huckleberry House. The presenting sponsor of our live stream was the Center for Human Kindness at the Columbus Foundation. CMC's live stream partner was the Columbus Dispatch. This forum was also supported by Downtown Columbus Incorporated and by the National Veterans Memorial and Museum. Join us next week as the not-for-profit Columbus Metropolitan Club once again connects people and ideas through community conversations. I'm Doug Buchanan with CMC. Thanks for listening.